This is Coda Radio, episode 563 for March 26, 2024. Hello, friend, and welcome in to Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business of software development and the whole world of technology. My name is Chris, and over there, binging Netflix, it's our host, Mr. Dominic. Hello, Mike.
You said Earthlings are some bugs.
Oh, no. No. You see, Takoff, in the chat room, you start talking Jar Jar slang, and this is what we get. This is what we get. So I should just close that chat room down.
That's the reason.
Yeah, right. That's the reason. Yeah. I tell you, though, you've already got me hooked. I just saw one note in the doc, the three body problem. And I was like, what? What is this about?
Yeah. So this is a trilogy, I guess. Well, a trilogy of books by, a Chinese author, Chixin Liu. Hope I got that right. There is a fourth book, but it's like an authorized kind of fanfic, which is weird. But I've read all four. I would say definitely the original three are much better. The fourth isn't bad. It's just has that fanfic quality. It's like every loose end I'm going to tie up because fanfic. So Netflix has made a adaptation of the first book, you know, called Three Body Problem, which makes sense. It's the name of the damn book. It's pretty good. They do a lot of changes. Like they place it in London. They naturally significantly cut the scope, which I think is just necessary for television, right? It's really good.
Well, I added it to my whatever you call it Netflix. So I'm gonna watch. I was just about to cancel Netflix. I'm like, all right, I'll watch this first.
It's I binged it in a day while I was working. It's eight episodes. There's some of the changes Netflix made, I'm kind of like, you just had to do it.
Couldn't leave it alone.
They like de-Chinesified it a little bit.
Uh huh.
So like one of the challenges in reading the books is if you're not like super familiar with China, like of course like we have Aesop's Fables, right? Westerners and Grimm's Fairy Tales. Like we know them, but there's a lot of like Chinese stuff you have to kind of know. Their tales and history, and particularly their social views, become important more in the second book. But it's interesting where the Western writers decided to change things. They definitely do a lot of, I guess they would call them composite characters, where there's like two guys who they merge into one. In one case, it's really good. So the dude Wade, I actually like the Netflix version of him better than the just completely unhinged jackass from the book.
Yeah.
But they did that by merging an unhinged American guy who they just portray as this great, crazy ass militaristic psychopath in the books with a dapper British, British gentleman of intelligence, effectively. Right. So, but he's a little brutal in the show, but like, you know, brutal in that British way where he's like, it's unfortunate that those children were. Parents were traitors. I'm British. Let's have some tea. They're all dead.
Yeah, all right. All right. I'm going to watch it.
His analogous in the book is, well, the one guy is like British spy guy, but he's like super British. The other, the American who he takes his name from is like, we're going to kill everybody. Like, let's do it. They also like tone down the math, which I guess, again, you have to for Netflix, but it's still there. I like it. There's one character I think should be drowned. But
well, since you sold me, before we get to any more spoilers, can I drop a little breaking news on you this morning?
Drop it like it's hot.
This is CNN breaking news.
We got official word that WWDC 2024 will run from June 10th to the 14th. They'll have a keynote on Monday, June 10th. It's going to be online again, virtual, but they are going to allow a few blessed chosen few into the mothership, developers, students, and of course, select press to go there and look at stuff. There's going to be also the State of the Union that they can attend, and then they're kicking them out of there.
And then it's time for you to leave. Blessed, chosen few, and mothership all in the same little paragraph. The iCult is well alive. Yeah.
Serenity Caldwell, who is a Apple employee now.
Of course, her name's Serenity, by the way, going with our cult themes.
Yeah, that's interesting. Also noted that Apple has been, quote, working hard behind the scenes to bring the sessions to YouTube. So now you can watch the WW23 content on YouTube. And I believe you'll be able to, I don't know, she doesn't say this particularly, but you'll be able to also watch the 2024 content on YouTube. So you don't have to get their developer app that was like available for iOS or go through their kind of crappy, not great developer website. You'll just be able to watch it on YouTube like all the other useful kind of semi-promotional material that other companies put out.
That just makes sense. Yeah.
It does just make sense. Yeah. I'll probably be watching it. I don't know if I'll live stream it. If people are interested in doing a Coder live stream for that, I don't know. Email or boost in and let me know. Meanwhile, Blair wrote in, and he has a website, economicsfromthetopdown.com, I wanted to plug because I like this note. He says, "Hey, guys, longtime listener here, and I just finished listening to 562, Apple Loses Its Shine. And I wanted to point out that the Consumer Welfare Standard of Antitrust isn't a legislative standard. Look through the Sherman Antitrust Act, and you won't find any mention of consumers or prices. The Consumer Welfare Standard is a judicial interpretation of the law pioneered by Robert Bork, with the express interest of making it," he says, "nearly impossible to actually prosecute antitrust cases. Reading through the Sherman Act, and it's plainly about limiting the power of large corporations. In fact, by the standard of today's legalese, it's very clear." He goes, "To your point, the DOJ will probably have to grapple with consumer welfare. But that's only because the court system has for decades been packed with judges that believe it." He says, "Thanks for the consistently great work." So this, I briefly pointed this out, is the DOJ is going to have to argue that Apple has harmed consumers. And you made the great case that you could clearly demonstrate that they haven't affected consumers negatively with pricing. Pricing has gone down. And I would add to that that Apple's entire premise, their core marketing pitch for the last decade plus, has been that the tight integration between services, software, and hardware is what makes the Apple experience work well for consumers, private and safe. They'll always underscore that. I'm not arguing those things are true or false. I am saying that is what Apple's argument has consistently been with one voice for over a decade. And they can argue all of those things. They'll argue every decision has been for consumer welfare. All of it. Of course they will. Even their Apple tax in the App Store, they'll say, "Well, we have to run a safe store. we don't want scams, and we don't want people getting ripped off in there." Like that doesn't happen. And so now it's going to be, whose version of consumer welfare do you believe? And I just think with Apple, they've had the best legal team for 20 years. They have been extremely consistent with this messaging for over a decade. And they're going to be able to blow apart things like the watch argument and all of the App Store stuff for the most case. I think there's going to be a few areas where Apple may get a slap on the wrist. But the fact that it's going to come down to an argument of consumer welfare, it's not going to be an easy case, I think, for the DOJ to make.
No, it's going to be an incredibly hard case. I mean, Blair makes a good point. The problem is those judges do exist, right? And let's just say you have to argue the consumer welfare thing. I guess the argument you could make is, well, maybe the consumer would rather Spotify work better. Or I guess, I mean, this is me spitballing, and this is a little, I don't think this would work at all. You could say Apple's restrictions. But now you're talking about like API restrictions and controlling this of what developers can do. You're basically making the Coder Radio iPad argument have prevented software that consumers would have preferred to use from ever being made. But the problem with that argument is in the ever being made part. You're arguing something that might have happened had Apple been more open, which...
versus Apple can argue concrete privacy and security benefits.
Right. Apple could say, look how often people put, rootkitted APKs on third-party Android stores.
And also they can make a technical argument. Say the watch. The watch is an extremely limited device with very small amounts of battery life and, very complicated configuration. So we use private APIs to make this thing work. It's just not something we can make generally available. And they could make a technical argument for it. And then you're arguing the technical merits of Apple Corporation's decisions. And let's see that work in a case.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever been to Reddit or Hacker News, that's just not going to fly, right? That kind of argument. I mean, maybe it's just too technical, but, the whole argument about web technologies and PWAs, I feel like that's the stronger one, because you could say, look, the consumer can pay for the software via Apple's payment mechanisms, Apple Pay, Google Pay, credit card, PayPal, whatever. And, it's a rich piece of web software. They can use it without limitations or without it being gimped on iOS. This would be the ideal world, right? And there you go. The consumer's free. But by Apple gimping what we colloquially call PWAs, but it's really just web technologies, right? It does create a situation that maybe they are harming consumers. But can I find 12 regular Americans or a judge who understands what the hell a PWA is and some of the arguably extremely nuanced arguments you have to make there? Because when does it become a quote Pete? Because, you know, Apple will split that hair left and right. Well, there's a difference between a website, a web application, and a progressive web application. I could already hear Apple's lawyers just filling the sky with darkness like the Nazgul. So I don't know how you feel about it. I'm torn because it's great that they're trying, but it seems like they bit off way too much here. And
yeah, I think there are legitimate things they could have gone after Apple for. We've talked about those pretty extensively, so I don't need to go into all of that. I think instead they kind of missed the mark on nearly everything and also made it seem emotional at the same time, which will play badly. You have to also consider that tech companies are pretty favored in the overall, you know, public. So it's gonna look badly, I think. I think we'll see. And if they go, if the DOJ can make a few really solid things land, if they could have gone after some of the steering provisions that we've seen recently or the progressive web app, limitations, if we could have seen them kind of, and maybe it's not too late. Maybe once they actually get in court, they can refine these arguments a little bit and they can actually go after very specific issues and get them. And then we could get some concessions from Apple. Like, I think one of the great things that would be a result of this is if Apple went all in on RCS. If they were forced to go all in on RCS so we could at least have equivalent messaging between platforms. I actually strongly think the blue and green bubble thing is very important. We take this for granted now, but a blue bubble means encrypted messaging, to Apple's standard. And a green message means you're sending it over the plain SMS network, and there's a lot of intermediaries that can read that. That is a very basic user UI cue that this message is probably not safe. And I think if we took that away just because people feel bad about having green bubbles, we'd be doing a disservice to the overall iOS experience. That said, you should be able to send pictures and video and, all that crap and reactions and all that junk that is just as good as it is with iMessage native or as close as possible. And maybe they get forced to, support that kind of thing. If we got those types of concessions.
Well, they're already going to do RCS, though, right? They said they are because of the European Union.
Oh, is that a thing here in the States? See, I'd love to see them do it. Maybe they are.
Oh, I thought they were just doing it. I don't think they're gating it.
If they were savvy, they'd already be ahead of that, wouldn't they?
Just do it. I mean, it's nothing. I mean,
you are right, by the way. Apple said it will support RCS messaging on iPhones by sometime in 2024.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So real world antitrust success story. You ready?
Yeah.
So Frontier Fiber is my fiber provider, right? For fiber internet. Mm-hmm. I used to pay $99 a month for a gig up, a gig down. Spectrum, our equivalent of Comcast down here, finally got off their ass and offered equivalent and slightly cheaper pricing for their equivalent service, right? So what did Frontier do a few months ago? I didn't even notice. Like, they sent me a letter and I just noticed because I had to pay my bill.
Okay.
For the same $99, I have 2 gigs up, 2 gigs down.
Are you kidding me? I would kill for that.
I didn't complain. I just pay my bill every month. Whatever. Why? It wasn't the government didn't come in and sue Frontier. I actually looked it up before the show. It was their competitor, their main competitor in my little town, decided to get aggressive. It's just like what T-Mobile did to AT&T and Verizon, forcing them to suck less. That is ultimately competition is ultimately how you solve these problems. So I don't know. I mean, this is why I keep pinning on the software thing for developers. I keep pinning my hopes on the web now, because it does seem like it's the only open market where you can truly compete to a degree. I'm not saying life isn't perfect, right? There's always somebody's always going to get a sweetheart deal, where who knows? There's always bullshit going on. But I don't know. Yeah. So by the way, $99, 2 gigs up, 2 gigs down.
Dang, that's fantastic. I want to give a shout out to listener Olympia Mike. He just sent us a great email about how he switched over to Helix Editor after having some problems with VS Code. And he says it's been a month. Helix Editor, he's still using it, H-E-L-I-X. He likes it a lot. He says, here's what he says about it. So this is how you'll know if it's for you or not. He says that it's a terminal editor like Vim, but way more full-featured, out of the box, with sane defaults, LSP, tree sitter support, And the editor has lots of hints to help you learn as you go. It's fast, and it's built on Rust. Oh, it's built on Rust, too. That's fantastic.
We are the crabs.
Thank you, Olympia Mike. That's great. Helix Editor. I'll put a link to that in the show notes since I can barely... Helix. I can barely say it. Helix. Say that five times. Helix.
I thought it was Helix.
Yeah, that's why I'm having a hard time. Thank you. I knew it. It was like stuck in the head.
There's no E. It's just Helix. Yeah, there's no second E.
Why is my brain wired like that, Mike?
Because the lack of competition in your texting apps is making you unable to parse English if it's not written in blue.
What I need is brain competition, you know?
Well, Elon, don't say that. Uncle Elon will look. I would stop. Those poor monkeys. Like, I would stop right there.
Coder.show/membership. Yep, this here is what we call a house ad. We have no sponsors but our members and our boosters. Coder.show/membership is where you go and use the promo code. Promo code Jar Jar. And take $2 a month off the lifetime of your membership. You're telling me we didn't have enough redemptions last week that this thing's still going? We're hanging on by a thread here and there's still this thing out there dangling? All right, well, if you go to coder.show/membership, use the promo code Jar Jar, you get in there. You see, the problem is right now, advertisers have less of a budget to work with. And I've talked to many of them, and they just think the best use of their money is YouTube right now. It's not that they don't want to target developers, as they would put it. It's that they think that they only have a couple of cracks at this thing with their budget cuts, and YouTube lets them do it at scale, and they can spy more. And so they think they can do better targeted. As if you could target better than this audience, right? But they don't get it. They don't get it. But that doesn't mean the value of the show is any less. It just means that advertisers are looking for a different market right now. We still have a few redemptions left. If you want to use that promo code Jar Jar, that guy, giving away the milk. Then you get Coder QA. You get an ad-free version of the show. You can also boost and support each production directly with a new podcast app at podcastapps.com. I like that a lot because it gets your message on the show, but also it lets you set the value. It's not a reoccurring thing. You decide when you want to do it, and it's all using an open network with no middleman. So that's pretty dang cool. You're also supporting an ecosystem of podcasting 2.0. So podcastapps.com, fountain.fm is great. So is Podverse and Castomatic if you're on iOS. Or become a member at coder.show/membership. And thank you to our members keeping us on the air right now. One for you, there wouldn't be a show. We really appreciate you. Coder.show/membership. All right, so it sounds like you had a very bad, no good experience with Rails. Update went sideways. Tell us what happened, Mr. Dominic. Therapy is in session.
Oh, boy. I have a older Rails application for a customer that needed to be updated to Rails 7. The irony is they asked this to be done right on as we're on the cusp of Rails 8 coming out, but hey, you know, this is life. Lowered expectations. Well, unfortunately, this was a ancient Rails project running like Rails 3.
Oh.
Now, if you're familiar with Rails, there is a thing called the asset pipeline, which is basically what it says on the tin, right? It's the pipeline of assets. Assets are defined as like, your HTML, CSS, JavaScript, I think images too. I think it does something. Used to do something with images. I don't know if it does anymore. And that has been in a state of, I would say it's like a planet with three suns. It has very chaotic periods that cause me headaches. Because there has been lots of changes in the Rails ecosystem, particularly on how front-end is done. At one point, we were all going to just use the Rails API mode, and everybody was going to React. And then that didn't happen. Before that, the asset pipeline got major changes to use all the Node.js stuff, particular Webpacker. Then there was like two iterations of how Webpacker worked, and it was really, really stupid. Now we have import maps for JavaScript, right? Which is closer to just regular JavaScript and not doing crazy compilation stuff. And it looks like, thank God, the way they're going is it's just JavaScript and HTML and CSS. Serve it from the damn page. Don't even worry about it. You don't need to do these crazy pre-compilation steps. However, starting from the ancient Rails 3 asset pipeline stuff and upgrading the app to Rails 7 was an arduous journey. because Rails 7 supports both the Webpacker way and the forward-looking way, I ended up supporting Webpacker just because it was too, I was doing too much surgery. It took me almost like 5 hours yesterday to get this. And it was one of these evil things where, so this is the other thing you have to know about the asset pipeline. In development mode, sometimes it doesn't, it does it differently, which means I had the truly joyous experience of getting to say it works on my machine.
So, yes.
No one ever. No,
man, it works on my machine.
Yeah, and it took me forever to figure it out. It sucked, right? Part of the process of fixing this was actually breaking my machine to make it, like, I hit all kinds of weird stuff. I had to like voodoo all the settings up to make it like production. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I don't have any assets. They were there. It was the craziest thing. They were in the directory, but on the page in question in the heading, it wasn't importing any of the JavaScript for like Bootstrap or any of that kind of good stuff. So that sucked. And I just want to put this question to anybody, particularly on the Rails team, but also any like web framework. You guys are going in the right direction, right? Get rid of Webpacker. Just serve the damn HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. You don't need to do anything with it. It's fine. Can we just all agree that we don't need to transpile things into JavaScript? We don't need to pre-compile JavaScript. We don't need to do anything. The browsers have got it. Let's just serve the damn stuff and be done. And not have like, well, in development mode, it doesn't do this optimization, but we do these great optimizations. But when they don't work, you have no, you know, front end, like modals won't show up and stuff like that. So, and it fails silently because it says that the deployment worked and Rails builds fine. Oh. So yeah, let's just not do this anymore, right? CoffeeScript, bad idea, right? Sorry, CoffeeScript people, but every time we try to muck around with our Lord and Savior vanilla JavaScript, we always end up in crazy situations. Let's just embrace it for what it is and go with it. My TED talk is over.
Just go with vanilla JavaScript. It's easy. Keep it simple. Keep it simple.
Don't try to fix it.
Everybody's always going to try to fix it, Mike. The long arm of history that slaps us in the butt over and over again has shown us that.
It's so true, though. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Well, I feel your pain. Thank you for sharing it with us. That'll be $285. Can I tell you about something that I've been finding really useful? I mentioned this on another show, but I felt like, I think it was self-hosted I talked about this, but I wanted to make sure the Coda Radio crew knew about this. It's called LM Studio, and their website is lmstudio.ai. It's available for Linux, Mac, and Windows. And it's a really easy discover, download, and run local LLMs manager and prompt tool. It all runs in a local app. So a lot of these, you know, when you get them, you have to like install one of the web apps. That means like another Docker container you got to run or something. This is just all in one. The search, the discovery, the prompt. It's multimodal too, which is nice. On the Macs, it'll use your neural cores. And it actually is quite useful. It supports AMD and NVIDIA and the Mac stuff. I'm not sure about Intel CPUs. But essentially, it's a discovery mechanism for Hugging Face and some of the other, you know, inputs for popular large language models. And they'll put new and noteworthy ones kind of on the homepage of the app. So you can launch this thing and just kind of see, well, what's the large language model everybody's talking about right now, or the one that's got the most traction? Oh, hey, I see that such and such came out from such and such company. And then you can click and it'll tell you what hardware it's compatible with. So it'll tell you if you're going to get accelerated on your machine or not. And then you just click download, and then it's just like you got an inventory of them, like a little, you know, screen, like a library of them, and you can just run the ones you want. You can switch between them. You can do some of the optimization for your machine if you want. It's pretty good at auto-detecting things. And it's just a great way to try these different ones out. It's LM Studio, and you can get it at lmstudio.ai, or I'll put a link in the show notes. So, you know, this is where Apple, I think, again, not to go on about this, but I think this is where they have a real, genuine edge above everybody else, is you can get a basic Mac M platform, any of the M2 or M3s right now,
mm-hmm.
And on average, you're going to have a better performance, a better performed experience than any PC user that downloads this stuff. I mean, if you just go buy the graphics cards on Steam, if you just kind of look at like the Windows machines on Steam and the graphics cards they have, Most of them are not really capable of doing any of this AI heavy lift. But every frickin' MacBook Air, all the way up to the ridiculous ones, has neural cores. And it's like, if you want to play with this stuff, the easy, and on Linux, like, you got to have all the NVIDIA crap working, or maybe you're lucky and it works on AMD, but most of them don't. It's like, it's not a great experience over there. On Windows, you got to get a super expensive system to do this right, to get equivalent performance to the Macs, or any of the Mac machines, literally any of them. Even the $600 one you can get at Walmart right now. I just think it's a huge advantage compared to anyone else in the market. And last week after the show, Microsoft announced AI PCs, and they're really, you know, everybody's going in on this, but Apple's got the silicon, they've got the driver, they've got the software, and they got the user base. They've already got a bunch of developers on MacBooks. And so things like LM Studio come out on day one, it's accelerated on that hardware. And if you got a MacBook, it just works. If you got Linux, you better go get your NVIDIA stuff working. And if you're on Windows, I hope you got a bunch of money to spend too. I mean, when you start looking at it from, I need, not, and I'm just saying I don't, but I'd say if you had a need for this type of software, and then you look at the hardware requirements and what these things require, I mean, a MacBook's not that ridiculous anymore at that price category. And the more RAM you get, yeah, it's built in forever, which sucks, but the more RAM you get, the more you can do with these things on the M hardware. Right out of the box. I cannot stress to you how much easier it is on those platforms than any other platform out there right now. And Apple just accidentally has this lead. It is their lead to now take at WWDC and do something with. This LM Studio is a great example of this, but just about every other popular large language model script or installer or container that comes out, all of them, and I mean like nearly all of them, have an Apple M series version now. You go back to any of the previous waves of new open source software, it wasn't Mac first. It was never Mac first. All this stuff was web-based and on Linux. It was, you know, the Linux stack. It has been now for a while, but not with this stuff, because they've just got that stack ready to go. I cannot stress it enough. It's a huge deal.
So do you think that Mac will become the, I guess, de facto workstation for people trying to do like AI or at least leverage machine learning?
I mean, as long as it's anything outside the CUDA stack or any of the open source stuff. Yeah, I just grab this LM Studio on any Mac and tell me I'm not right. It's ridiculous how low the barrier of entry is. This app, it does all the download of the models for you. It manages everything for you. It does the updates. It runs the prompt software. It's all self-contained. And if you're on a Mac, it's just a DMG image that you download, you install, and you're done. It's different approaches. Like, they have an app image for Linux, which works pretty straightforward. But again, there's an entire complicated graphical stack that is inherently tricky to keep and get working on the Linux desktop. Anyways, it's a pretty great app, and it works. Go play around with this. It's a good benchmark to see how hard it is on your machine and what it takes to get your software stack to do this.
Hmm.
You know, and if you got different OSs, play back and play around with them. Write in and let me know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just think it's just hours of difference in time sometimes. I think it's kind of exciting.
The Mac Action Show.
Now, I tell you, there have been times on this show where we have been extremely hard on Apple hardware.
It's true. Yeah.
But I'm not saying that they are playing 4D chess here either. I think they got kind of lucky. I mean, they had the foresight to start building neural processors in. But man, they really got lucky, considering they missed all the other aspects of AI. But they got this one thing really right. Probably because they were just using more and more machine learning internally, I suppose.
It's classic Apple, though, right? What is the part where they excel? Building the hardware. Designing and building hardware.
True.
I mean, yeah, this is where you kind of want them.
Oh, another house ad. Well, then I get to tell you about a workshop we have coming up. Lucky me. Coming up Friday, April 5th, that's next week, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, a live Noster workshop. Yep. Notes and other stuff transmitted by relays. Have you been Noster curious at all? Do you even know what it's possibly been used for or could be used for? Because the protocol is actually very promising, and we're finding new use cases for it every week. It's really simple. It's a flexible event object, which is really just passed around as plain JSON on the Noster network. Each user is identified by a public key. Every post is signed, and every client validates those signatures. That's it. And of course, it's open source. So I think one of the more compelling use cases that's emerging right now is decentralized real-time chat. Not to replace your favorite messenger app or your Blue Bubbles, but for live events on the internet, like live shows, like Coda Radio. And because everything is just passed around as plain JSON, it means the ability to build this into cross apps, different podcasting apps, different websites, is really straightforward. It doesn't take a ton of overhead like Matrix might or something else. And you can create one identity. Yeah, I know. But really, the idea is you create one identity, and you can use it across all the different apps and sites that use Nostr. Yeah, I rolled my eyes at that first, too. But I'll tell you what, I've been trying it this year, and it's actually pretty nice because you can, say, move between clients. There isn't just like one client for Nostr. There's different applications and different clients, and you just keep that identity with you. It's as simple as bringing a key. So here at JB, we've been putting this to the test. We're working with the development team over at Fountain.fm, and they're building a new live experience, a web experience, and something that'll eventually be built into the app with an embeddable web chat built around Nostr. So the chat can be pulled into any app. Because it's just plain JSON, we could build bots around it for title suggestions and grabbing quotes. I mean, the use cases and possibilities there are really strong. It's all an open standard using this relay system, so it's uncensorable as well. So we're going to do a workshop. I'd love to have you join us. We'll have some giveaways. We'll have some fun. It'll be a great chance to just test this use case and just bang the code. Really, it's just notes and other stuff transmitted by relays. But when you think about that at a conceptual level, there's a lot you can do with it. So come join us for the party. Friday, April 5th, 2024, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, your local time at jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar. You just come on over to JB Live. We'll be doing the workshop on that Friday. We'll help you get signed up, try some of the apps, try out some of the Fountain FM code that they're testing, do a few giveaways, have some fun. No doubt joke around and make fun of Wes and Brent. I'm kidding about that part, maybe. Details and time, jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar, Friday, April 5th. Hope to see you there at jblive.tv. Google calls it an experimental successor to C++. We call it, I guess, Carbon. Mr. Dominic, I guess you were taking a look at Google Carbon this week. Is it truly a C++ successor? How many times have I heard that?
Well, you know, we're very early days. I only added this. First of all, longtime Apple developers will know Carbon was the predecessor to Cocoa, the Apple basically like, you know, you could have Carbon apps or Cocoa apps. So interesting choice of name. This, I actually ended up asking Google Gemini what the hell this was versus Google Go. And yes, I did subscribe to Gemini on my work account. So there's that. Gemini had a pretty... I would say apathetic response. It's like, yeah, well, you know, Go is for like web development, and this is just straight C++ interop. So then I went and read their GitHub, because one, I love that Google's using a Microsoft hosted platform for their stuff now.
I hadn't thought about that. Well, that is true capitulation.
Yeah, well, you have to. GitHub's the default now. I mean, it just is. So, with love to GitLab, which is a good second choice. It is intended to be. It's way early days. We're not talking a 1.0 until 2026. But its intention is to be a safer, but not as like, you know, Rust BDSM safe C++ successor with a hyper focus on interop with existing C++. So think easier to work on your existing giant ass C++ code base because you're Google in a language that is just a little nicer. From their perspective, right? That would be their argument. I don't think we should waste too much time on this. I do feel it's interesting that there are so many wannabe C++ replacements, I feel, right now, and nothing has taken on. I think Rust had probably the closest thing to a moment, but due to some weird internal, I don't even know what you call it, brouhahas, it's certainly not dying, but it don't you feel like the wind has kind of come out of their sails?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Go, I don't know. I never cared for Go, so I'm the wrong person to like summarize. People use Go, but it does feel very web-centric. So yeah, I don't hate C++. So I'm right. We've done a few episodes where I'm like, if you use modern C++, it's just not that bad. So I don't know. Do you need a replacement? Maybe.
That was my question. It's like, maybe that's a question we should punt to the audience. Is, do we need a replacement at this point?
I mean, I almost feel like the replacement for bad, scary C++ is, don't you wish we're using a more modern version of C++? Because yeah. it really...
That's not the that's always the problem, is that people are stuck on older versions.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the problem, right? The curious thing about Carbon would be, all right, so you're touting your thing as C++ compatibility. What is your minimum compatible version? Surely you're not going back to like C++99. And there are a lot of code bases that are tied to that. Or, I mean, we're probably going down the C++ rabbit hole too much here, but what about like weird older versions of Microsoft Visual C++ that, you know, Microsoft, I will say, has been a good actor recently. And one, just supporting GCC, they've been like really good in LLVM, but also their flavor, right, MSC++, is not as wildly, insanely different as it used to be. It's basically stuff that's like Windows specific that's different, or they do support some of their, you know, every week Microsoft has a new GUI framework, so they have to support it, I guess, or them. Everybody remember Metro? No? Okay. Yeah, I just put this in because if one were to ever actually create a C++ successor, then that would be a very important language that we should all talk about probably every week for a while. But I'm pretty sure that successor is C++ itself.
Yeah. You know what? But it's on our radar now.
Yep.
Okay, I've got a question. Has anybody else noticed that no one is talking about the Apple Vision Pro anymore? I'm wondering if we're at a stop-start moment for this thing. It felt like a week or two ago, maybe Apple was going to bring new life into this kind of field and we were going to see more applications over there. But here we are, 6-8 weeks in. Everybody's just back to talking about AI and NVIDIA, and nobody's talking about mixed reality or VR or AR or whatever they want to call it. Is it dead, or are we just... in the eye of the storm? I guess I'm asking you, and I'm asking the audience, boost in and tell us what you think about that.
She's dead, Jim.
I wonder. I mean, because if you think about it, Apple has to kind of focus probably on AI just because they're getting slammed in the quote unquote market because they haven't talked about AI enough. And so that's what the focus. So then then it's like whatever's left over for hardware and talking about existing products is what's going to get sliced up for the Apple Vision Pro.
It couldn't survive the simplicity of math.
It's too damn expensive.
Too damn expensive, right?
Yeah. You make one now. If they came out with one that was even $999, it would be considered a massive discount, and people would probably snatch it up, even though that's ridiculously expensive. I just, as an update for my Quest VR, I picked up something called the Bobo VR headset, which is their latest version that just came out. It's very, very, very comfortable. It basically takes all the weight off of my face. I'm not even kidding you. It adds a fan in the head strap, so I have an adjustable cooling fan for my forehead, which is nice. And then it has a 10,000 milliamp hot swap battery, like a drill battery, but with a magnetic connection, so you can hot swap batteries in. So you could just keep on going all day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty something. I also wanted to point people to, before we get to the boost, there's two really, 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 really enjoyable pieces of human studying, I guess you could say, available. I don't know how else to put it because it's really something. Remember Sam Bankman-Fried? Well, his mom and dad have submitted their pleas to the judge to go easy on Sam to the court. The mom's document is something to behold, to witness the vacuum of morals and ethics and the way that only a mother could paint a monster. It's truly something. Here, I'll read you the last two paragraphs. This thing's multiple pages, but Barbara writes, "But this is not just a personal tragedy. The ease in which we co-sign young lives with so much promise to the trash heap of society is a tragedy as well. To what end? The financial losses customers and other creditors were facing, it's now clear, will be compensated in full. No one who knows Sam could seriously think he poses a threat. If allowed to resume his life, he would do the only thing he ever cared about, devote the remainder of his natural life to leaving the world a better place than he found it. With his talents and single-minded commitment to doing good in this world, there's a real chance that he would succeed, even accounting for the harm done by the implosion of FTX. It's a really thick letter. There's no moral accountability for any of this. And the only reason creditors are getting paid nearly in full, I think, is because they're redefining what paid in full is. They're redefining to the value of their coins back in the time that this went down, and now their coins would be worth more. So they're taking the gains and using that to pay everybody back if they're still getting scammed. These letters are incredible. These PDFs will be linked in the show notes. It's insight into what genuine privilege is like, at like a level that maybe only some will ever know. People that live at sort of this other stratosphere of society, how they view themselves and how they view these things and how the law should be applied to them. It's really something, Mike. I don't know. You might want to have a drink or two before you read it don't go in sober. That's all I'm saying. Oh, wow. Yeah, it's really something. We'll see. Meanwhile, Ross Ulbricht, the creator of Silk Road, turns 40 years old tomorrow as we record, so the day this comes out. And he's been in prison since he's been 29 for creating a website where adults could buy drugs from each other. And he didn't sell the drugs, but he made the website. And so for that crime, he has been in jail since the age of 29, and he turns 40 tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, let's take 1 week and avoid politics. But here's a big fat Beyonce butt for us, a bootylicious, if you will. You know, it would be great if the folks like Sam's mom felt that way about lots of people who go to jail for stupid mm-hmm. things. Like, I actually am very sympathetic to her argument because I think it should be the universal argument.
Yeah, parts of it work.
But parts of it are like, considering the harshness of American jails in particular, it's like I watched this documentary on Netflix about, I think it was like Norwegian jails or something. Some kind of Viking-like people. Sorry, guys. And their jails just look like college in a lot of ways. But American jails are horrible.
Yeah. And we love to really, really, really go after people for financial crimes. Right. But then there's all kinds of really horrible crimes that people get a lot less time for. So there's those arguments to be made, too. And it's software crimes and hacking crimes. You know, it's like we've been making an example out of people since Kevin Mitnick, and we're still doing it. Anytime right. somebody is punished for computer abuse or fraud, it's like we have to make an example out of them and put them away in there for double life sentences.
Well, because like it's some script kiddie with an ion cannon gets painted as this like dark cyberpunk sorcerer. We shouldn't go into this. The problem is Bankman-Fried is not the poster boy for We Should Chill. You know who the poster boy was? What was his last name? Aaron, the guy who invented RSS and killed himself he was being so aggressively prosecuted by the federal government. That's the poster boy if you want to make the arguments. Like, what he did was publish PDFs that he had access to through some university account. And they decided, because they were under pressure from the service that sells the subscriptions to those PDFs, because he did it electronically, right? Because he used those dark, dark Bitwise magics. I mean, he was facing real jail time, federal jail time. It's just, I don't like a lot of these people actually going to jail. I think like, permanent bankruptcy, crippling. I don't know what the criminal version of like alimony is, where you just have to like pay to support someone for a while. But like maybe Bankman-Fried, or like the easier case is Aaron, right? Maybe he should have just been forced to pay back the cost of what the subscription company would have made. I get he had a philosophical argument, but you know, we live in the world we live in, not prison. I mean, that's just crazy. I don't know.
I know, especially imagine, you know, it's one of our kids who we've encouraged to get into technology and encourage them to learn how computers work. And then that's what ends up happening.
Yeah.
It's tragic.
It's tragic. And also so we are getting a little into politics. As a taxpayer, I don't think it's a good use of my resources. And I know all our friends on the other side are going to come up and say, it's not yours once you pay the taxes, right? It's everybody's. But is it important that these nonviolent people sit in prison? Is it doing anything? It's not a deterrent. If it were a deterrent, it wouldn't keep happening.
Right.
So it's just a waste of money. And also a lot of these prisons are private. So they're super corrupt and super inhumane. So I don't know. That's okay. So I did it again. Sorry.
Ask not what your podcast can boast for you, but what you can boast for your podcast.
Well, now look at that. Tampa Tech Trekkie coming in with 20,000 sats.
That's because he's got 2 gig fiber.
He says, I need, and I think technically that makes you one of our co-ballers this week.
Hey, Rich Lobster!
I like to think Tampa Tech Trekkie's like, let's see, I'm going to go for 20,000. I could probably go more, and I know I'd get baller. Perhaps I'll get lucky this week because nobody supports Coder. I mean, you know, that's probably what he was thinking. He says, I needed some advice for a self-hosted MP3 streaming platform. I know this might be better for self-hosted, but I'm an OG Coder radio listener and will more likely hear the response in a future episode. So I'm using Ubuntu LTS on an AMD EPYC system. I'd like something fairly future-proof as my two previous streaming apps were based on PHP Perl, and, well, they just haven't been well-maintained. Any recommendations? Thanks so much. Well, I got two recommendations for you. Audio Bookshelf is my number one recommendation. It's still a fairly new project. It's got years of runway left. It will also do your audiobooks for you, as the name implies. But it's also a pretty darn good podcast player, has a mobile app, and I think it'll generate RSS feeds of stuff in the app itself, and so you can plug that into any app you want, potentially. Audio Bookshelf, that's recommendation number one, audiobookshelf.org. And then, if you're already a Nextcloud user, there is a GPodder Sync app, and that is handy because it will work with a couple of different apps, including something like AntennaPod, and it will just be your own back-end sync status and watch status and stuff like that. I believe it'll pull them down, but I'm not sure about that, where Audio Bookshelf will. And I'd love to hear others' recommendations as well. That's always something that definitely following, because it'd be great to just have our own archive here at the studio. Jeremy Ross comes in with 20,000 sats.
I hoard that which your kind covet.
Using Castomatic, no message though, just the support. We appreciate that, Jeremy. Thank you very much. DS Swartz comes in. What a row of ducks. Enjoying the show. And now that we found out that Apple is considering using Google Gemini as their AI. Yeah, I think this has been made a really big deal. We were watching some CNBC coverage this morning before we started the show. And they're going on and on about what a big deal it is that Google has signed a contract with Apple, and they're going to be handling some of the AI queries and things. I just thought this seems like exactly what I would expect, like an extension of their search deal. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Apple has a revamped Siri that tries to handle a bunch of the user use cases, and then when it can't handle it, it punts it to Google, just like it does for search today, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah, people seem to be thinking it's more than that. The implication by the tech press is that it's going to be doing all of the AI lift. Like Apple just decided... This is exactly what they said this morning. Apple decided its internal system called Ajax was insufficient. They're scratching it, and they're going to roll Gemini for now as the base of everything. If that is true, that does seem like it would be a bit of a negative thing. It would show that Apple couldn't catch up in time, I guess. If that's true, I think it would be a bad look for Apple. If they're just punting search queries that their local stuff isn't going to handle, that would make a lot of more sense to me. We'll find out. We don't have to really speculate too much because we'll find out in a few weeks. Kirasia is back with 6,666 sats. Jar Jar has my root password. That is true. And has enabled the Jar Jar members discount again. For iMessage, it's more of the behavior. RCS has been embraced for interoperability. Apple has so far refused to implement it or open up iMessage. Apple has been fairly consistent with leaked internal memos that they do everything they can to increase the friction to exit. Yep. I agree with all that.
All factual.
Uh-huh. Another row of ducks comes in by them. A former Signal soldier here. Yes, they give you near unfettered access while deployed. I was asking about internet filtering. The only thing we had blocked for us was porn. Ah. I got cut off here and there when things happened, like someone died. I was wondering about that, but then it was more up than down. So that's really interesting insight. I thought I'd heard that maybe when somebody dies, they pull the plug on the internet. And I wonder if that's like a morale thing. Glad they don't filter the show over there. And I'm really happy that you're able to listen. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Remember we had the dude in the Navy who's like, when he gets to port, he's always.
From time to time, you know, back in the day, I used to hear about people sinking before they get deployed.
Yeah. They would download like the backlog
But it's good to hear that they can do it while deployed now too. Thank you for telling us. Dave Jones, the pod sage for Podcasting 2.0, comes in with Spaceballs Boost, 12,345 sats. Oh, and also some birds on the side.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life.
Dave says he's getting caught up from his podcast hiatus. He says, keep it up, fellas. Thank you, Podsage. Good to hear from you. Thank you very much. Adversaries 17 comes in with 14,337 sats. To the booster known as Healthcare Aaron, or Anon, whatever. I'm a horrible reader, I guess. He says, I also work for IT for a medium-sized hospital. Unfortunately, this is about on par. Oh, yes, remember the old systems with Red Hat 9 and whatnot and old Windows boxes from 2003 or whatever it was? He says, this is about on par for course. I've been doing it for almost years now, and I have the same concerns about the lack of care for outdated systems. Unfortunately, until it breaks or a new version is necessary for a cool feature, upper management typically doesn't see the value in keeping things current. IT is only a cost to the company and does not directly generate revenue. You know, I had that same experience in banking.
Yeah.
And then I would go and I would sometimes work for companies that were more tech focused, and it was a totally different approach to their infrastructure. So it really kind of depends on the sector, I think. I think that's some good insight right there. Thank you, adversaries. They continue to the booster known as Healthcare Anon Part 2. I would continue to make your concerns known, but don't get pushy about it. The company is the one taking the risk, and ultimately it's on them. And it's that is true. He says, with Server 2008 R2, it's a solid while old. Win Server 2022 isn't exactly much different. Sometimes it may also take a, oh, we should have listened to you about updating this earlier moment to wake management up. And then he sent us some extra sats just because, you know, he wants to keep the coder train going. Thank you. Editor Drew also chimed in after the show and said, you know, he may want to consider just leaving. If it frustrates you, it's not a very great working environment. It could be a time bomb. You might want to just consider leaving. Yeah. And I could also understand that point of view as well. Very much, I personally have seen a big difference in companies that technology is a big part of their product, and so they invest in it. And there's such a different attitude from not only the updated server systems, but even like the workstations and laptops that people get. They just buy nicer stuff and upgrade more often. It's just one of the perks, I suppose, of being in the industry. Cultivator comes in with a Spaceballs boost, 12,345 sats.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
That's amazing. I've got the same combination on my luggage.
He writes, your phone may not be listening all the time, but don't mistake that it isn't listening to you. Don't forget the information Snowden risked his life to expose, as well as the Vault 7 leaks, which Hassan will likely pay for his life for. Yeah, phone calls for sure. An SMS. That's why I was pointing out the blue versus green text. Those are all, I think, you should consider those out in the open. I don't believe that your smartphone has a microphone running that is doing like an RTSP stream or something or whatever, Icecast. I don't know what even technology, WebRTC. What do you think they're using? Mm. What codec do you think they're using? What is it, Opus? You know, like, I mean, to get down to the technology of this. Like, how are they doing this? We can barely make a call work for an hour to do a show.
Yeah.
Reliably.
The battery would be nuked too. So.
Yeah. And when you're moving down in and out of cell range and stuff, it would absolutely burn the phone up. And it would, you would, you'd be like a, it'd be, you'd see it on your Wi-Fi. You'd see it on your ISP because it'd be like a megabit constantly.
Yeah.
You know, people would notice that. So I don't think it's literally listening all the time. I think there's absolutely going to be and has been times where maybe you open up the Meta Facebook app and it turns the microphone on while you have the app running. Sure. And maybe they even like you put it in the background and they try to keep it running. I think that's why they've exposed some of that stuff in the iOS notifications now and on Android. I think those things can, will, and do happen. But I don't think as a matter of practice, you know, every smartphone is listening to you 24/7. If you wanted to tell me that they had the ability to remotely turn on the microphone and listen if they wanted to, well, I could get on board that that conspiracy train if you had some evidence of it. Outside of, you know, just the fact that I think they're just really, really, really good at spying on you in various ways and then figuring out what you like. And if you have email and Gmail, they're reading every frickin' email. So it's not so hard to figure out where you might go next. You know, if I buy oil and I buy oil filters and I buy a wrench, well, is it that hard to derive from that what future products I might need for car maintenance? Anonymous sent in 3,000 sats saying I'm homesick, so I wanted to give Coder a try. I love Lightning because it makes it easy for me to say thank you.
B-O-O-S-T.
Thank you very much. We had 8 boosters total, and we stacked 90,915 sats. Not our best episode, but we do very much appreciate the messages and the support. If you'd like to boost, I think the easiest way these days is to get Fountain. It connects easily with Strike, which is one of the best apps out there. You can grab the sats and boost off in just like minutes once you have it all set up. The biggest climb is that initial setup. You can see lots of people get it working. It's pretty easy. You could also, there's various ways you could get Albie, and then you could do via the podcast index if you want to do like an all web browser experience, those types of things. And I sometimes get invite codes. You could always reach out. But thank you, everybody, who takes a moment to support the show either by a membership at coder.show/membership or by boosting in. This is a value-for-value show that is completely sustained by our audience right now. As the marketing departments out there that have smaller budgets seem to be focused on YouTube at the moment, we're gonna weather that I guess, podcast winter, which is now turning into like when it becomes a whole year, it's like the year of hell in Voyager.
It's like the podcast Ice Age.
Do you remember the year of hell? In Voyager?
Yes, oh, yes.
Two great episodes. Two really good episodes. That's only, you know, for them, it was a whole year. For us, it was two episodes. For them, it's a year. It's like kind of like what's happening right now. Anyways, we appreciate the support. Thank you, everybody, very, very much. Don't forget, I'd like to know your thoughts if we've seen a start-stop moment for the Apple Vision Pro. Is it dead in the water? I'd love to know your thoughts on that, too. Just curious because I want to get people's thoughts on the record before WWDC. Mr. Dominic, is there anywhere you'd like to send the good people?
Yeah, go to alice.dev if you need anything automated or if you just need some general development help. Give me a ring.
Will do indeed. All right. Well, if you'd like to follow me, I am experimenting with the Noster thing. ChrisLass.com to find me over there. Just ChrisLass.com. Why? Because it's interesting and it's not controlled by any one company. And I just like to be a rebel. An OG rebel. You know, the old cyberpunk style, chrislass.com, links to what I know, right? I don't think it makes a super compelling Twitter replacement, but I think there's something there with the protocol. That's why we're going to do a workshop. We're going to just experiment with it. I appreciate you listening. Hey, stop listening to me ramble on and go over to coder.show/563. Links to what we talked about over there. You'll also find our RSS feed and our contact form. And if you want to get in that chat room, derail the show or, I don't know, make a title suggestion or correct us or suggest, I don't know. I don't know what you do, but we got a chat room. You can find that at coder.show/matrix. We're live on Tuesdays, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. See you right back here next week.